Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, fast and free. Stars to light together. You and me on the stage.
Open the voice gate for July 7th, 2026. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate, both on Twitter and on Blue Sky. And if you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. Click the red box that says Sponsors Podcast. You can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside your other host, Case Lowe. And Case, it's 13 days away from Kobe World, and it just feels wild that it's already here. And in some ways, it makes perfect sense that we're just in spitting distance of the biggest show of Dragon Gate's year.
It does not feel good.
This is not a good feeling.
It does not feel like we're 13 days away from what is typically, to use a gross term, the biggest run of content that we do, typically the time where the most eyeballs are on this product. It doesn't feel good. I mean, do you feel like Dragon Gate feels better or worse than it did heading into Uno Dos Tres and better or worse than it did heading into Golden Coliseum?
No. I mean, we've played the better or worse game on the last Voice Gate episode. But like, if we're talking like big picture wise and everything like this, it if anything, Uno Dos Tres was the start of a sickness that has been 5 months long and has been ongoing. And this, we're not going to do a full Kobe World preview this week, but this coming out of the Corcoran on July 2nd, boy, this card does not give me a lot of just excitement, to be quite honest, looking at it at this point.
Yeah, I guess we can start there. There's a bunch of non-Dragon Gate stuff that I kind of want to hit on that's Dragon Gate adjacent at the top of this pod, but let's do that real quick. We went through this Corkin on the 2nd. And then we got the full Kobe World card either on the 3rd or the 4th. I don't remember which day it exactly came out. And just your gut reaction to seeing that card in full, what did you think of it? Where are you at now with it?
I think like now sitting with it almost a full week, it is a perplexing show. And it is not necessary. It's a show like not to be like patting ourselves on the back, being like, we're such experts of the Dragon system. We could book a better card than this. But I look at this card case and I go, really? So we're doing a 12-man tag for Yamato and having basically everyone over the age of 45 on that show, and that opens up slots for things elsewhere to be happening. No. You can't have a smart thing of Shun Skywalker. You have to shove him into a three-way six-man that doesn't really feel like it makes a lot of sense and not the best use of some of the people who are involved in it.
No, not at all. It was a card that I think on paper I liked the idea of some of the matches, and I was devastated at where they were placed in the card. There were other matches that I can't believe were put onto World and not, say, a Corkin show. And then you stare down the barrel of that main event, and I'll go through the history of the recent Kobe World main events when we get to it, because, again, I don't want to dive into it just yet, but it is just another puzzling piece of a puzzling equation of this now multi-year run of Kobe World main events, where whether the company is firing on all cylinders or whether the company is at an all-time low point like it is now, you get to Kobe, you get to mid-July, and you look at what is headlining that show, and you scratch your head and you go, huh, how did they end up with that as the biggest match on the biggest show of the year? It's become quite a tradition over the last 5 or 6 years, where that Kobe World main event doesn't really seem to either represent the promotion well, or there's a cloud hanging over it in one way or another. I think maybe in this year, with just the haphazard booking that's happened, maybe it does represent the promotion well, but it's not really a promotion that I'm all that invested in.
Yeah, and like, not to like turn this into Kato the Elder at the end of every episode saying Ryo Saito needs to be fired, but like, I just look at this card and I look at the hand that was kind of dealt across this year. You're not having Daya on this card. Daya is a ghost to everything. Shimizu comes back, gets hurt. You know, I wonder how much that impacts the layout here, just if Shimizu is around with that. And I mean, you have what I would argue is one of the most disjointed farewell tours that we have seen for someone in Shun Skywalker's just general exit strategy, and what all he's been booked in and has made appearances for since announcing his exit coming up in August. And I don't know, but if it were me, I just like, it just blows my mind that Shun Skywalker's final Kobe World match is going to be in a three-way six-man with his unit that is dead, dusted, in the dirt. But we have to do it this way because Johnny Valletta didn't get his farewell to Saipatra. And that's not to say that I'm negative about Johnny Valletta. Like if anything, Johnny Valletta being back is not necessarily the full Flamita bump that it happens, but it does make me kind of the smile curls up at the edge of my mouth a little bit. But yeah, there's a lot of just disjointed promotion, and I feel like longtime listeners of Voicegate by now can know this story as well as we do at this point, just like with how things have really planned out, has turned out essentially for the last calendar year.
It's not awesome. I certainly don't love it. You know, it was fun last week recording an episode of Those Days, which if you missed it, we have an episode of Those Days up on the feed covering 10/10/96 these days with our friend Alan Forrell. We went about 2.5 hours with that, doing Michinoku Pro and a bunch of other stuff. That was a really, really fun episode to record. And as I told Mike afterwards, I go, you know, whenever we record these Michinoku Pro pods, which we do once a month, I always leave and go like, oh God, I want to do more of those. And I started to put together the notes for episodes that, you know, we probably won't even get to for a full calendar year at this point afterwards. And I was just so invested in that. And then this Corkin card came around, and you know, I'll say before we take a little diversion, if you're wondering where the written review is for Aggressive Gate 2026, the July 2nd Corkin Hall show, I don't think you're going to get one. Now, that is not something that is going to be a habit going forward, but I did move last week. I moved the day of the Corkin show. So I woke up that morning, I watched the Corkin show live, which is the only way that I would have had time to watch it, and then moved and have just been dealing with that and some other life stuff ever since. And it was a holiday weekend and I was out on the holiday weekend. And so I was hoping sometime Saturday, Sunday, Monday, I was going to have a chance to sit down and write out my thoughts to this show. And that did not happen. And now we're almost a week removed from it. And quite honestly, it wasn't that inspiring of a show. So while I still feel it's super important to have written reviews for these shows, really just for the historical significance of it more than anything, it is not going to happen for this Aggressive Gate 2026 show, which I think maybe speaks to a little bit of the promotion. And I also, I think it's important to write about these shows in real time to have these firsthand documents of how we are feeling in the moment. Luckily, I think 5 years removed, 10 years removed from the show, I don't think we're going to have rose-colored glasses on KZ versus Cielo and the lengths they took to get to KZ versus Kakuta. I think we're all going to kind of remember how we were feeling about this main event, this era of the promotion. So no written review for that July Corkin show for those that care. You will get fresh takes as we go throughout this show that won't be written down, won't be shared anywhere else. And then obviously for Kobe World, I will once again put pen to paper. And hopefully going forward, we continue to have those monthly Corkin reviews. In the 11 years, July 2nd was the 11th anniversary of me writing Dragon Gate reviews for voicesofwrestling.com. And I think you can count on one hand the amount of Corkins from July of 2015 to now that don't have a written review. And unfortunately, July 2026 is going to fall on that list. That might actually be the fifth one that doesn't have any sort of coverage, which is crazy. And thank you to Mike for pinch hitting what he did. And I think John Carroll might have done some years and years and years ago, but it's not going to happen this time around.
And like, to be quite honest, when we get into the show itself, like I think a oral document is just as much as that Corkin really deserves. But that's not all we're going to be like focusing on today with this week's episode of Voice Gate. We have some ponderous questions we're going to ask each other throughout the show. And I think at this time, I'm going to hand the wheel back over to you and let me at them.
I watched three promotions that weren't Dragon Gate in the last 24 hours, all things that I was excited to watch in one way or another. And I would say all things that are in one way or another Dragon Gate adjacent, Mike Spears. Pick the promotion you would like to start with. I would like to cover all three of them before we dive into this Corkin show and some upcoming Dragon Gate stuff. Would you like to start by talking about Osaka Pro, Michinoku Pro, or Glate?
You know you can't dangle that last one without me just biting onto it like a catfish, like waiting for like the first worm of the day, man. You know me well enough that I of course have Osaka Pro takes that we will get into, but you can't say Glate without me jumping on that, man. Come on, let's talk about Sonic Wrestling and Ariake.
Well, here's the thing. I had not watched any Glate in 2026, and I certainly did not watch hardly anything in 2025 when it was behind the paywall, but I had gotten out of the habit of watching this promotion. And so when they brought it back to just, you know, live streams on YouTube without any paywall, I had fallen behind on it and I wasn't necessarily eager to catch up on it. And then this afternoon, it dawned on me. I was like, oh, that's right. I can watch that show from July 1st. I have time. Let me go back and see. Let me check and see what the inmates have said about Glate this year. Let me see if I can rifle through some of the biggest matches of the year. What is fascinating to me is just how few of these Glate matches actually have cage match ratings. You know, there's a pretty deep match guide for 2026, but very few of them have any sort of cage match rating next to them. So I went back to the very beginning of the year. I watched a match that I adore that I'll talk about in just a second. I would like to watch this G-Class tournament, at least in particular the Ishida versus Yamamura match, but I did not have time. So I watched a show from January, and I watched the stuff that interested me on January 1st. I should note that there's actually stuff that interests me on July 1st. There's actually stuff that interests me on July 2nd. So
I have that show on right now, actually.
I mean, I think my big takeaway is that Glate has my attention once again, at least in terms of picking and choosing and finding matches that look good on paper. Because, Mike, I watched this Hayato Tomura and T-Hawk versus Kaito Ishida and Kazuma Sakamoto match from January 20th of this year. This is Glate Pro Wrestling version 101, Shinjuku Face, 279 fans. I think this is one of my favorite matches to take place in Japan in 2026.
I've been telling you for how long that T-Hawk is really good now.
This is kind of my takeaway is that, you know, T-Hawk is great in this match. And I kind of thought T-Hawk outclassed Lindemann in the July 1st match. Do you have your notebook handy? Did you watch this tag match from January 20th? Do you have a rating on this?
I have it at 4 flat.
Okay. I have it at 4.5. I think it's
okay.
I think it's every bit as good as any of the really hyped Knockout Brothers tags this year. And I don't think that's a judgment call one way or another. I like the Knockout Brothers. I'm into Yuto Ice. I get what he's trying to do. I think Oscar plays his role in that tag team perfectly fine. I think it's just as good as any of the Knockout Brothers matches. I was kind of blown away by how good T-Hawk and Ishida were with one another in this match.
Yeah, and I read T-Hawk's note blog. And fortunately, unlike Shima's, most of his are not beyond a paywall. And he's talked about, like, you know how I've gone on about this Shinya Aoki match, right? Like, the match that was in, like, the Curse Corkin that I think was, like, one of the better matches of 2025. He's talked about, like, how he is now, like, kind of breaking down who he is as a wrestler into simple things. And it's really kind of interesting. Like, he has, he still has the clip and the speed of things, but like, I'll be interested to see your thoughts on the G Class tournament, because that becomes kind of a T-Hawk like display of the little things and the ways that he gets, like, especially like in the final of the tournament, he has just like really weaponized the knife edge chop as a finishing move, and it kind of rocks.
That does sound awesome. You know, one of the things that fascinated me, and this isn't necessarily a new revelation, but I think it really hit home just because I hadn't engaged or interacted or read about or watched Glate in so long, was as I was looking at these cards and looking at what was on YouTube and kind of cross-referencing with Cage Match, it is just amazing that we are now, I mean, what was the anniversary show? This was the 6th anniversary show in July?
5th anniversary.
5th anniversary show. What is absolutely incredible to think about is that unless you are really, really bullish on Hayato Tomura still, and if you watched his world title reign in real time, I don't know how you could be, because I think everybody was really bullish on Tomura until he was put in the biggest spot possible, and then he just laid egg after egg after egg during that title reign. But it's amazing that this promotion is now, at the age that it's at, with theoretically the history that it has behind it, and the names that I am interested in are Lindemann, T-Hawk, Ishida, Yamamura, Sakamoto. There is no one homegrown. There is no non-Dragon Gate defect. There is no one that I think is uniquely Glate or that has a history uniquely tied to this promotion that is interesting or relevant in any way. The guys that had history that we knew were good the day this promotion started are still the guys that are good and interesting to me. And the fact that there has been no evolution on that front is pretty astounding to me.
So I have one person as a counter, because I know that you've picked and choose, and I don't know if his stuff kind of has made it like past your picking. Did you catch Takanori Ito versus Daisei Sakamoto on the anniversary show?
I did not. I skipped over it. That was not on my list of things that I had pegged. Is that good?
That ruled. That, honestly, I liked the main event, but after the main event, it was my favorite thing on this show. Like, they've been doing this feud with Ito and Sakamoto over like the last few months, and part of it has been Sakamoto knocking out Tetsuya Izuchi, talking about guys who never that never progressed as Glate only guys there. But Ito and Sakamoto, they have a Ledet UWF title match that it is if this is what people would bandy about as Ledette, UWF, or like UWFI, UK kind of style, this, I would be a lot more, I would be a lot more positive about it. And in some ways, it felt like it was worked like a strong BJ match, basically.
I liked the start of Sekimoto's year so much, and then I've fallen behind on All Japan, so I haven't really seen what he's done since probably March or April.
His late stuff's been fun, especially with Ito.
That's good to know. I wish I would have carved out time for that instead of what I did, which was carve out time for the Abismo Negro Jr., Nobu San, and SBK versus Arashi, Alpha Scal, and Soma Watanabe match, because that did not do anything for me.
No.
That was so disappointing. I was really hoping, especially with that match being so late in the card, that they were going to go out there and really have a special AAA showcase match, and they did not do that.
Yeah, and I like Arashi a good deal. And it just, like, I don't think Soma Watanabe is good at it whatsoever. Like, they keep on trying to do things with Soma Watanabe, and I just don't get it. But, like, the real takeaway is, like, SBK at this point and Nobu-san, like, as much as I enjoyed Chuck Shimatani, like, this is, like, people evolve over time periods, and, like, especially given the fact of where he's worked for the better part of 2 years, you adapt to that style, right? Like, that's just how those sorts of things kind of go about it. And I just don't, like, Tokyo Bad Boys are just go away heat with me at this point. And I think SBK physically is looking better than he has in years, but it's just not it.
It's just remarkable to watch that guy, knowing what we thought about him, and really, you know, it's not, I mean, I haven't gone back and watched an SP Kento Dragon Gate match in a little bit now, but knowing what I saw, and even with now years of hindsight and just seeing how his career has played out, really standing by my real-time analysis of Kento and Dragon Gate and thinking this was such a special wrestler, and always making that Adam Cole comparison where if this guy was just a few inches taller, imagine the way that the wrestling world would be bowing at his feet. And it is just remarkable to watch him on a big show like this in, you know, a big arena with not that many fans, but, you know, a big show.
Hey, Hiroyuki Suzuki was proud of the alleged 1,000 people that were there.
It's hard to say because you can't see anybody with the way they shot this show.
No, absolutely not. And hey, they got into United Japan finally.
Yes, yeah, congratulations on that. That is, you know, what every promotion dreams of. Yeah, it's really, what an honor. But it's just, it's amazing to watch Kento in this environment where he just comes across so unremarkable. It's not like he comes across bad. I mean, there have been times where I've watched Akuma Fujiwara since his exile from Dragon Gate, and I've gone like, wow, that guy went from being legitimately great to a borderline bad wrestler. With Kento, it's not that. It's just he just lost everything that made him special. It's unbelievable just how average he comes across now. And this was a guy that, from his first match, came across like an above-average wrestler in so many different ways.
You know what it's like? It is when a really promising pitcher prospect makes it to the majors and has, like, not necessarily like the pitching equivalent of Jeff Francoeur's first month in the majors, but they like knock them dead, and then they immediately get a UCL tear. They get Tommy John, and when they come back, they're just not the same wrestler. And that's without him ever getting severely injured, to my mind. But it's like that kind of drop, I feel like.
Can I alienate our European listeners for just a second and give you a different real sports comp for SB Kento?
All right, let's do it.
And this is one of those where I think it's going to be the sweet spot of our Venn diagram. This is probably going to alienate most of our listeners. The Euros have no shot, but I would imagine even the American ones would struggle with this. Is SB Kento the closest we have in the Dragon system to Chris Coughlin?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's a name. Yeah. Yeah. I really hate how much I like that.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, Chris Coughlin, I gotta look up what year it was. I feel like it was 2008, because that's sort of in my sweet spot of when I would have known stuff like this. So Chris Coughlin was the NL Rookie of the Year in 2009, which was controversial then because he beat out Andrew McCutchen, he beat out Tommy Hansen, he beat out J.A. Happ, Garrett Jones, Dexter Fowler. I mean, those, you know, some guys that went on to have legitimate careers. He shouldn't have beaten J.A. Happ in the Rookie of the Year voting, but he did. So Coughlin has that on his mantle where he's NL Rookie of the Year.
He does bat 321. Let's be fair.
It's not a bad stat line. I mean, you know, I'm a little surprised the RBIs are that low, but he does bat 321. You're right. And he has that year, and then his career just never ever does anything again. He goes from batting 321 in 2009 to 268, 230, 140, 256. He gets back up to 283 on the Cubs in 2014. I don't remember him on the Cubs at all. And then back down to 250, 188, 252, 200 in his career. So it's this 8-year slide that begins with him hitting 321, winning Rookie of the Year, and getting MVP votes that year. And then he's just never heard from again. He's a complete historical anomaly.
He was the best player in baseball after the All-Star break in 2009. Mm-hmm. I was living in Miami at this time, Case. I remember Coughlin mania. Like, I think I probably went to a couple of the games of that. Like, that was also like those late 2000s and early 2010s Marlins, like in the lead up to Marlins Park, are just like a real disaster, other than like Jose Fernandez. You know,
it's, I mean, that's, you know, I'm looking at that baseball reference right now. So they go 87-75 and they don't make the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
which is the most Marlins thing.
Because when they make the playoffs, they win the World Series back then.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is the most Marlins thing possible. They win 87 games. They don't make the playoffs. But this is a year where Hanley Ramirez finishes second in MVP voting. I feel like this was probably the first good Dan Uglas season. 31 home runs, 90 RBIs. He only hit 243. But I feel like this is when Uglas started to come into his own. I always liked Emilio Bonifacio. And then that rotation, you know, you had Josh Johnson there and Ricky Nolasco for a little bit. But it's a disastrous franchise that just has these weird bright spots. And Chris Coughlin, to me, is the SB Kento of baseball.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to unsee that. But you're bearing the lead on the biggest glate take you could possibly have. Case, how do you feel like L. Linneman looks in his 30s?
He looks like a weird man.
I was taught never to tell a lie. And him showing up as Tanahashi Sito at this show just completely lost me.
That's such a good comp, because my take on his gear was going to be that he was wearing gear that Hiromu would wear if Hiromu was a normal person, but it's actually closer to Tanahashi, you're right.
He looks like mini Tanahashi if you put a wig on him.
Yes.
But then he would have like crazy cauliflower ears and probably melanoma, given the amount this dude tans and he's only 31 years old.
And I found the main event.
Oh, he's not even 31. He's 30.
He's 30, yeah. And I found the main event of that show to be a little underwhelming. I, you know, very much in the good but not great category. And given what you've said about T-Hawk. Yeah, I was too. It was fine, but I was just coming off of, and this is not the best 1-2 punch, but I was coming off of that January tag where T-Hawk and Ishida had all of this life to them. And I have my thoughts on Lindemann, which are all incredibly high. And I think the world of him still. And I know you've been really into T-Hawk lately. So I was kind of expecting these guys to really go in there and blow the roof off of the place, at least as much as you can in this promotion. And I thought T-Hawk got close to what I was looking for. Lindemann certainly did not get close to what I was looking for. And it was a rare performance. I mean, I've watched this guy's entire career. I remember his debut match quite well. It was one of the rare times where I've been pretty disappointed in a featured Lindemann performance. I wanted more from him than what I got in that match. I was a little bummed out by that.
No, yeah. It really, for, I don't know what I really want out of Glate in 2026, but like a promotion where at least if there's no progression amongst youth, but I would like to see my guys do well in it. And in some ways, I feel like that a Lindemann has stagnated, whereas T-Hawk has kind of evolved over the last few years. And I think it really started with the Russell 1 run and that kind of showed that he had a little bit of charisma, but I think his G-Rex run here, like, sadly, was probably his kind of best work, and he's kind of, you know, I mean, he was slumming it with Tamura and Ryo Itaka for way too long, but you will find the G-Class pretty interesting, especially T-Hawk's work. Like let's revisit this when you get through the G-Class and you see what he does throughout that tournament.
I think so. I hope so. I think it looks good on paper. We mentioned that about a month ago, where I was like, oh man, like Glaze actually got some stuff down here that I'm interested in. And I just hadn't had a chance to dive into it. And I was reminded with the big show this past week, which I'm always glad coincides with your birthday, because I know that's what you've always wanted. I was like, oh, I should spend some time with this pro show. But you know what? I'll say this. I mean, we mentioned this on the last Dragon Gate centric voice gate that we did, that the Dragon Gate roster right now is very, very, very much divided up between guys that I care about and guys that I don't, in a way that really since 2018 I haven't felt this way, where a card would come out in 2018 and my eyes would dart towards whatever the maximum guys were doing, whatever Shun Skywalker was doing, and whatever Ben K was doing. And in 2026, it is, let me look for Jackie, let me look for Rita, let me look for Kimura, let me look for Tanaka, and let me look for Hamare. And outside of that, there's not a ton of names on paper right now that are really grabbing my attention. I will say, in the case of Glate, I'm motivated to watch T-Hawk. I'm motivated to watch Lindemann. I'm motivated to watch Ishida. I've always liked Kazuma Sakamoto. You know, Yamamura is sickeningly good given everything that he's gone through in his career. And if you're telling me there's good Daisuke Sakamoto matches in a year where I've enjoyed this late stage, you know, I've enjoyed Sakamoto from what I've seen in 2026 more than I have certainly any year of his career in the 2020s. We have to go back to probably 2017 or 2018, the last time that I really thought Sakamoto was as dialed in as he is right now. So that's not to say, because this is certainly not the case, that Glade is a better promotion or on the par or on the level of Dragon Gate in 2026. For as bad as Dragon Gate's been, that's still a preposterous argument to make. But I will say that I kind of got to put Glade back in rotation. I at least have to pay attention to what they're doing, because there are some names now that at the very least, maybe I'll watch that G-Class tournament. I'll get burnt out on just the atmosphere of this promotion and I'll toss it aside once again. But there are names here where I feel motivated to watch them, and I'm a little bit more intrigued by this promotion now than I have been in a few years.
Yeah, they have kind of cut down some stuff, but in some ways, there are certain things that they still are really, really lacking in. And part of it is anyone under the age of 30. Like they finally got another student, and maybe this one lasts a little longer than that. But at least with like the outsiders being brought in, like I feel like that they have been a little bit more interesting on who they bring in this year a little bit. But I would say, yeah, no, Sakamoto, I'm right now looking at his cage match. He has, I'm sorry to tell you who he tags with for a couple of these Ludette Rules matches. It's Hideki Sakane, but it is interesting stuff the way that he does UWF and Glade. There's three matches that he is in. Combined case, 20 minutes of time.
Okay. For this. All right. I'm into that. I can do that. I'm going to do my best to report back on some more Glade findings next week. Somehow that has now taken up real estate on the Kobe World preview show that we're going to do next week, which is absolutely astounding to think about, but I think that's where we're at.
Hey, I mean, it's kind of all we have for next week other than Kobe World preview is that Shinjuku Face show. And even though if you watch enough Glade, you still get Kendo Kashin in 2026, you know, I mean, we're going to be subjected to that on that Shinjuku Face show, because we need to celebrate Punch Tomonaga of all people.
Awful, awful. All right, well, I've got Michinoku Pro Takes and I've got Osaka Pro Takes. Which one do you want next?
Let's do Michinoku and finish up on Osaka, because I have a Osaka Pro related question for you.
So it took a while to surface, because this show is almost a month old now, but I think the footage has only been out for like a week if you're sailing certain parts of the internet. But the Michinoku Pro Michinoku 2026 Tokyo Conference Volume 1 Viva Mexico show from Korakuen Hall, which, by the way, outdrew the last Dragon Gate show in Korakuen, is now out. Top three matches on the show were Andy Wu, Rase, and the Great Sasuke versus Kagura, Luis Monte, and Taro Nohashi. El Desperado, Kukui, and Vanvert Jack versus Arashi, Dick Togo, and Vanvert Negro. And your Michinoku Pro Tohoku Jr. Heavyweight title match between Musashi and Sangre Azteca Jr. The top three matches on this show are worth watching. Really, you know, the Monte tag is really kind of only worth it just to see Monte in another environment. But the Despy six-man and the Sangre Azteca Jr. versus Musashi title match main event, Mike, these are absolutely worth your time.
So I have a question. What's your opinion on Vanvert Jack?
Okay, glad you asked. Largely unfamiliar. And okay. I have a lot of questions about Vanvert Jack.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed Vanvert Jack and Vanvert Negro in this match.
So Vanvert Jack has been wrestling since he's seven. And
yes.
Vanvert Negro is his dad.
So I was super confused by this because I know that he got votes in the Voices of Wrestling 30 under 30 this year. But then I clicked on his cage match and he had matches going back to 2012. And I thought, maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. Maybe I'm a little confused here. But I kind of liked what I saw.
Yeah, he takes a bit to kind of get into, I feel like. Like his first appearance, you're kind of like, oh, this guy looks like he should be working JCW shows, like straight up. And for like a 19-year-old who's really like, he's still on like that level of indie, you know, he has like a certain level of snap of his flying that like he has certain things down that you would hope you would have down if you've wrestled for 12 years. But he also, for a guy who is masked at 19, he is able, I feel like, to get over emotion at a level that I don't think that we got to see just comparative, like from El Cielo so far. You know, I feel like he's a better mask seller than that. Have not seen a lot of Negro, his dad. Their sister is a Joshi too, and she's like 14. But like they do wild stuff at my wake auto lab, I think is what the venue is called. Like,
gotcha.
I kind of want to see a couple My Way shows after seeing him. Like he's really got it.
This is a fun match. You know, my tolerance for Despy, and especially Despy as an outsider, is pretty low. But Despy looked motivated to work on this show. I thought Dick Togo, it's funny we had that conversation last week on Those Days about Dick Togo and just the leniency that we have with him because of his legendary career, that we are able to sort of compartmentalize this New Japan run. And you watch Dick Togo on a show like this where he's a heel and he's Dick Togo, but he's not House of Torture Dick Togo. And you're like, God, his career, just the twilight of his career is wasted doing the absolute worst wrestling possible, because he's a pretty fun addition to this match. And so all told, it's an enjoyable 14-minute affair. And that leads into this 25-minute Tohoku Jr. title match. I watched this before the Osaka Pro Show. I think if you enjoyed the Osaka Pro main event that we're going to talk about in just a second, you would also really enjoy Sangre Azteca Jr., who I like a lot, versus Musashi.
Oh,
this
sure.
is just, it's 25 minutes. It's a real slow build. It sort of lulls you in. And then before you know it, you're like, oh, I'm watching a great junior heavyweight match right now. Like, these guys are doing work that, because of the over-reliance of heel interference in New Japan and in NOAH, and because juniors, you know, just typically are not something that All Japan really thrives in, this is kind of a match that it is becoming a little bit of a rarity in contemporary Japanese wrestling. And so it was really refreshing to see just a no bullshit sort of real sports approach to this. And it's coming in Michinoku Pro of all places. But by the end of this, I thought this was a 4-star match, and one that I think everybody, if you're listening to this, if you care about this style of wrestling, go out of your way to watch this. Cause I think Sangre Azteca Jr. is really good. And I think Musashi, every time he makes tape, is a guy that I want to see more of.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going on my way for that. It's interesting, like, the way that I feel like at least as a show over the last 18 months, we've kind of broadened our look into Lucha Rus in a lot of ways. And the Osaka Pro show, and at least like me getting into and watching the Osaka Pro has like kind of made me a little bit more ponderous about certain things. But like I am going to find some time to get into that Michinoku Pro show and maybe on a plane flight this week.
Yeah, well, watch the top three. I think you'll enjoy it. Again, you know, the Monte match is just sort of like, oh, this is what Monte looks like. And Cork and Holly seemed happy to be there. That was nice to see. The six-man tag with Vanvert Jack is not anything awesome, but it's a fun enough match. I thought it fit the vibe of this show quite well. And then I did think it was a great main event. And it was very, very similar, I thought, to Suzuka versus Ultimate Spider Jr., which is from that Osaka Pro Summer Battle Show on July 5th, which just hit YouTube. And, you know, to your point before I throw it over back to you, I was thinking about this as I was watching the Osaka Pro Show today, where it's like, you know, this show, our show, has gone through ebbs and flows where, you know, when Dragon Gate was really involved with Kyushu Pro, we found a lot of enjoyment there. When the Ryukyu Dragon stuff wasn't as grating, we found some enjoyment there. And now, you know, and there are times where we've covered Glate really closely because we've enjoyed the in-ring of that promotion. But right now, Osaka Pro has taken the place of that secondary Lucha Wrestling promotion that I think you and I both find a lot of enjoyment in. And, you know, in 2026, there's no promotion I've enjoyed more than Osaka Pro, which is crazy to say, but it's true.
Yeah, and I only had time for the top two matches from the Summer Battle Show from the 5th from Taisho Hall. And really, I am going to make time to go back, and I'm just going to skip over any match I see Ebison in, to be quite honest. like Ebison and Jojichiro Osaka, I don't need to see much of them, but the rest of the show, I'm definitely going back, at least for those other two matches. And a question that I want to ask you. So on these shows, you had Vertex versus Mihara Shigehiro Iwe and Kirei Kanoshita. And then the main event, the Osaka Pro light heavyweight title, Ultimate Spider J versus Suzaku. I have a big question to ask you that really occurred to me during this match with Jay and Suzaku. Has Dragon Gate evolved like so much from like the pro or the Lucha Rest thesis, or at least what we were seeing in 1999? Like, has it evolved away from like a pure strain of Lucha Rest to like such a degree that's almost to its detriment with this? Whereas I came away from the show feeling like that main event felt like, okay, this is what 2026 Lucha Rest should feel like. Like, I really felt that kind of deeply about this. And I guess the question I have to ask you, Case, is how do you feel about the state of Lucha Rest in 2026 and in the forms that at least like you have been more up on Michinoku Pro, I guess, by virtue of seeing that show with this. But like,
I try to watch Michinoku Pro when it makes tape on Wrestle Universe. I enjoy that promotion.
But you have Dragon Gate, which has been the predominant strain of Lucha Rest, at least arguably since 1999. And then you've had other forms kind of come in and out throughout of it. Between Osaka Pro, Dragon Gate, and Michinoku Pro, what do you make of the state of Lucha Rest in 2026?
I'll add Glate into that conversation too, which is funny to say, but I think they're at least worth mentioning in this. The biggest issue facing Lucha Rest is the thing that I always bring up, where I think the predominant modern wrestling style now in the United States, Mexico, and Japan is a sort of watered down version of what Dragon Gate was doing 15 years ago. And it makes high-end Dragon Gate stuff less special. It makes what Osaka Pro does less special. It makes the high-end Glate stuff, the high-end Michinoku Pro stuff, less special. That is the single biggest issue facing this style of wrestling right now, is that everybody is doing it, and I think predominantly everybody is doing a pretty poor job of it. And so the things that made Toriumon special in 2003, the things that made Dragon Gate special in 2011, even the things that made Dragon Gate special in 2016, if you want to go back 10 years ago, are just things that are kind of constantly being bastardized and watered down. And that's, I don't think there's anything that Dragon Gate can do about that. I don't think, and maybe if I had more faith in the state of the promotion, I don't think there's any reactionary measures to take. I just sort of think that's where things are at right now. And I would not deviate from the thing that has brought you to the dance and that has made you so special for years and years and years now. I wouldn't change any of that internally. I think what you're speaking to in regards to Osaka Pro directly and comparing them to Dragon Gate and where they stand, I disagree with the idea that the main event from an in-ring perspective maybe highlighted some things that Dragon Gate is not doing well currently. I mentioned this when we did the show with Jay about a month ago or whenever that was, and this is the thing that always jumps out at me when I watch Osaka Pro, is just that promotion right now knows what it is. The production is super sleek. The crowds are super hot. I'm able to follow this promotion very, very easily. It's a promotion that knows what it is, and I don't think Dragon Gate knows what it is right now. I think if you sat down every member of the Dragon Gate roster, or even just the upper half of the roster, and you said, what's working? What does this promotion do well? You might get different answers for everybody. I feel like when I watch these Osaka Pro shows, it's a locker room that is on the same page, and they would all have the same answer if you said, hey, what are you guys doing well? Why are you guys capturing the attention of the American Deep Puro fan base in 2026? I think they would have a general idea of what they're doing.
And I think that some of that can be the fact that essentially I've only gone through the shows that we have talked about, Case. They have a core roster of like 10 people. And I think that does so much to having a level of coherence that, you know, I'm not going to count the Gayora website right now, that though I think it's just, honestly, the Dragon Gate roster is three times the size of Osaka Pro. And I think that that allows for that to be on the same page. But I don't know. It at least to me, when I contrast that match with the main event of Korakuen, I feel like that it accomplished so much, at least with Suzaku, and like the way it kind of was worked with it. And it also made me wonder a little bit, like I'm sorry, I'm kind of just throwing spaghetti at the wall. Did OG just need a lot more time and was just not in a homey enough environment to get that for him to have a performance like that? Because that was easily the best singles match of his career that I've seen.
Yeah, so Suzaku was OG Shiba, who is Kotoka's brother, which I always forget about.
Kotoka, who is working random DDT offshoots at this point.
Did you see what Kotoka was doing this week with Shima?
Is Shima getting a job at Kiki?
No, Shima. that was very mean of you. No, Shima wrestled Yuji Nagata.
Right. Yeah,
in Super Japan. Singles. Yeah, in Super Japan this week. And Kotoka was his second, do those Super Japan shows make tape? I would assume they do.
Man, I do not know. I have not looked to that depth of Wrestle Universe, to be quite honest.
Is that considered a DDT sub-brand?
Yes, it's Shinshiro Takagi doing What If I Was Going to Do DDT in a Different Way.
Okay, yeah. So the Super Japan show on May 27th was up on Wrestle Universe, and that was Shima Nagata in a tag against Poison Sawada Julie and Sanshiro Takagi, which means I will not be watching that match. That sounds awful. Semi-main event.
That's the deal with these Super Japan shows, and why I have not touched them is that they are really old school DDT as hell.
Semi-main event, Minoru Sawa and his comedy character in Satoshi Kojima versus the Brahman Brothers. I'm not doing that. I'm not watching that. But I will watch Shima versus Nagata in a singles match with Kotoka as a second. The OG Shiba thing, like, that guy's career is so weird. He's been away from Dragon Gate so much longer than he was in it between his stints in All Japan and Glade and now here.
And injuries, to be fair.
And injuries, he has. Yeah. I don't know. I think I think he struck magic one night. I think this was the best performance of his life, and I think he's probably never going to duplicate this again.
And I think that's entirely fair to say. Like, I've also kind of... I liked Ultimate Spider-J and Takeuyaki Kida when they would ever show up in Chikara, like, as rookies back then. But Spider-J is... like, he is someone that I kind of go, like, why hasn't he ever shown up in another promotion, like, outside of, like, the Osaka area as, like, a bigger wrestling star?
Well, it's crazy. It's crazy when you watch this promotion this year in comparison to Dragon Gate and the complaints that we've had about Genki Horiguchi and the... I don't know if complain is the right word, but just the malaise that hangs over Paradox. Mm-hmm. And then you compare that with Osaka Pro and the mileage that they are getting out of their older wrestlers. It is absolutely insane to think about the work that Aran Sano and Tiger's Mask have done as a tag team. And I was listening to the flagship a few weeks ago when they were talking about just the abortion that is the Aaron Wolf booking in New Japan. And, you know, why does he have to be saddled with House of Torture? What's going on here? This is the least interesting way to use him. You know, if you're going to have him be on these Nagata Blue Justice shows, why can't he have a tag team with Nagata? Why can't they be wrestling the Knockout Brothers? And it made me realize that New Japan should really just be copying. This is such an odd sentence, but it speaks to the absurdity of Japanese wrestling in 2026. New Japan needs to look at what Osaka Pro has done with Aran Sano and Tiger's Mask, and they need to take note and copy it note for note for Aaron Wolf, which is crazy to say, but Osaka Pro has made the most out of these older wrestlers this year, the Ultimate Spider Juniors, the Billy Kin Kids, the Tiger's Mask, and they have really started to pave the way in a real way for these younger wrestlers. I mean, Mike, on July 20th, we're getting Sano versus Ryu Matsufusa in the Osaka Pro World Championship match. I'm telling you right now, that is the match on July 20th, which is the same day as Kobe World, that I am most excited for, without question.
I mean, that there's a lot of like fun stuff coming out of that promotion. You're already getting Suzaku versus Yasutatsu Udera on that show, too. Like, it doesn't have to be hard.
No, it doesn't. Undercard on that show, by the way. I hope we get this show in full. Match 2 on that July 20th Osaka Pro show. Zeus, Billy Kin Kid, Tsubasa, and Shima versus Super Delphin, Kushinobu Kamen, The Bodyguard, and I'm going to butcher this name, Motonuba Tezuka, who I am unfamiliar with. But you get Shima versus Delphin in match 2, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, and like that's where those vets should be, is in match 2, you know, like them and Zeus and the Bodyguard.
Beneficial in some way or another to the younger guys, and not in the way that Genki Horiguchi's done it. But, you know, we'll talk about this when we eventually get to this Dragon Gate stuff. I was looking at KZ's booking this year, and I was looking at what KZ has done in Cork and Hall, just because I always think that's a good, you know, it's the best indication of where this promotion's at. That's the best check-in you can have. And when you look at what KZ's done, there's this stretch in the middle of the year and, you know, March, April, May, where there are these natural vibes versus paradox matches, and they ended up leading to nothing. And the entertainment was coming out of Gucci versus Yamato, and that went nowhere. And while they're still not quite comparable, because it's not like Osaka Pro was a full-time touring promotion, although they are running a lot. You know, the footage we get of Osaka Pro is sparse, especially the footage we get in full. We get some digest here and there, but the footage we get in full is sparse. But I'll tell you what, I would trust that promotion to handle Yamato versus Gucci in 2026 far better than what Dragon Gate has done with it. And it goes back to the massive disappointment of this Kobe World card, where, Mike, I called my shot in February. I said they have something with these two wrestlers, especially when you factor in the Brave Gate match from early 2025 with Yamato and you know, who was then Daiki Onigiuchi. These guys have chemistry in a way that, quite frankly, Yamato just doesn't typically have with younger wrestlers. And you should be running this Triangle Gate program to pay off at World 2026. And the payoff might be Yamato beating the younger wrestler. And that's not the end of the world, but that's a program that I could have sank my teeth into. And now they are both just doing completely uninteresting things at World. And what looked like a pretty interesting Triangle Gate program was completely abandoned. And, you know, who cares? We'll move on. And that's the type of stuff that Osaka Pro is not doing in 2026.
Yeah. No, that's entirely a fair thing to say. Do you have any other?
Did you have a star rating on the main event of that Osaka Pro show, the Suzuka versus Ultimate Spider Jr.?
You're going to think I'm insane. I was 4 flat.
No, that's fine. I was a little bit higher on it, but I don't think you're insane for that.
Yeah. It's the best match that I feel like that OG's ever had. And
yes. Oh my God, without question.
And really, I think he gave as much to it as Ultimate Spider J. The post tope that he did, going towards the conclusion was just slick. Like, the thing is that this match is, it hits all the notes that you want to for a light heavyweight style Lucha Rest singles match for me. It scratches that.
Yeah, you'll
so
like
well.
That Sangre Azteca Jr. match from Michinoku Pro then, because I think they're very similar matches. I think the pacing is very, very similar.
Yeah, no, I have found it, and I will be watching it.
and you know, to just one last note on the Osaka Pro thing, where it's like,
yeah,
I don't know, every month I'm kind of in a position now where whenever these shows make tape, I have become so invested in Sano, Matsufusa, who I've been on board with for a few years now, and this show Mizuno kid, who are all, they're all so young, they're all so interesting, and I had Matsufusa and Mizuno in my 30 under 30. In hindsight, I should have included Sano as well, but I really like the work they're doing with those guys, and I'm invested in them as much as I am at this point. You know, Aki, some of these lower tier Dragon Gate wrestlers. Yeah. I mean, I think the high end Osaka Pro guys, which I would categorize as Sano, Matsufusa, Mizuno, Ultimate Spider Jr., and I specifically 2026 Tiger's Mask. I mean, you could put those guys on a Dragon Gate show tomorrow, and I think they would fit right in. And that's the other thing about this promotion is yes, they're independent wrestlers. Yes, Osaka Pro is still, you know, this hyper-regional, not full-time promotion. But the guys on this roster, especially compared to the state of modern Japan, where I'm so nonplussed by so many guys who are pushed at a high level, I do feel like the Osaka Pro guys are not good indie wrestlers. They're not good regional wrestlers. They are just some of the best wrestlers in Japan, which is crazy, but I really, really feel that way now.
Yeah, it's kind of wild to me that I'm looking at Matsufusa's cage match right now, and he only works in Osaka. Like,
That's what blows me away. I think that guy, if he just wanted to work anywhere else, I think he would blow the doors off of that promotion.
He only works inside Osaka city limits, other than the time that Shima booked him for his anniversary show earlier this year.
I'd like to know more about him. I think he's a really talented wrestler.
That got me looking at the Shima show from May. I really wish this thing made tape somewhere. There's weird enough things on the show that I'm intrigued in, other than I'll be skipping over the opener if that ever makes tape somewhere.
Let me take a look at that card real quick. Shima 29th anniversary show.
Yep.
Yeah, Joji Otani being a sex pest is a bummer because he's on a lot of shows. Makes that more difficult. I would watch the top two. Irie and Sugi versus Yoshida and
Cappy.
Copy, who I am is this a Joshi? This is a Freedom wrestler.
No. They Copy works a lot of late.
Okay, and then Kohei Kinoshita, who I also don't know.
You see the guy, you'll know exactly who he is.
Okay,
he was
in Vanguard Jack versus Shima.
He was the sixth in the Vertex tag.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. That name didn't look familiar to me on paper, but I know who you're talking about now.
Thoroughly a Shima guy at this point.
Gotcha. Yeah, Osaka Pro, it's great. It's a really easy promotion to follow. I actually wish it made tape just a little bit more because I could use a little bit more Osaka Pro in my life. But, you know, Mike, I think you're on board. I think as long as that promotion continues to be as entertaining as it is, I think when these Osaka Pro uploads happen, I think we got to watch them. I think we got to talk about them. You know, I'll continue to keep an eye on what Michinoku Pro makes tape and if that's ever worth talking about. And quite honestly, Glate mildly has my attention right now. So we'll go from there. And I guess an hour in, we'll finally talk about Dragon Gate as we're 2 weeks away from Kobe World. And it feels like we're avoiding talking about Dragon Gate.
Yeah, I mean, because we kind of are avoiding Dragon Gate, talking about this aggressive gate show from Corken Hall on the 2nd. Attendance under 1,000 again here. And, well, we now have the Kobe World main event. We have the full Kobe World card coming out of this show. And I think just like big picture on this, I watched, because of the way that schedule works and my birthday and everything, I watched the shows that happened over the weekend right before I watched this one. I mean, the Osaka show from Sky Hall and then the Kobe Sumo Hall show. These three shows in concert were some of the least interesting Dragon Gate shows I feel like in a long time.
That's the hard part with this promotion, yeah. Is that
there, even the good's not interesting.
Well, you know, I think 2018, like the last half of 2017 and 2018, there were parts of that promotion that were bad. It was Yasushi Kanda and Punch and some Antios heel stuff that was bad. You know, Takashi Yoshida in big spots. Really low star ratings, stuff that was really off-putting. The hard part with Dragon Gate in 2026 is that the booking is bad. The in-ring, though, is largely just uninteresting. I mean, this is another Corken show where I don't have a notebook match. This is a Corken show where my highest rated match is 3.5 stars. And there have been times throughout history where, especially on the Toriumon shows, but even, you know, throughout different eras of Dragon Gate history, you know, that happens. You get a 3.5 star peak on a Corken show, but normally that coincides with some massive angles or some movement or some stuff that we really care about. And this was,
yeah,
I guess in theory, a show that had a massive angle in the main event and just the way that it's going to tie into the Kobe World main event, but it's not really anything that I care about.
Yeah, and like, so you, on this show, the one thing that I'll say is, you know who I felt like was just on the show at a level that was not the case before? There was way too much GM Ryo Saito being GM Ryo Saito throughout the show, it felt like.
Yeah.
So like up and down, he makes his presence known throughout. He makes his presence known after the Jiro Shimbashi versus Alexander Otsuka fight. So he can announce the Kobe World match for Jiro versus Masakatsu Funaki. So he makes an appearance there. He makes an appearance after the eight man and the veteran eight man, and then Shun Skywalker and Johnny Valletta. He makes an appearance after Kota Minoura versus Jason Lee to make the Twin Gate match. And then he makes the appearance after the main event. That is just a mount of a general manager like character that has never needed to be in this promotion. It was always fine that when Yagi was the GM, he would just pop up from the floor and start snickering, go like, yeah, no, that match is made now. We'll do that. And it just like, it made me feel like that the purpose of the show was to get Ryo Saito as general manager over more so than anything that's supposed to be happening in 2 weeks.
I feel if there's any time where it's appropriate to have that much Saito on the show, it's probably the Corken Hall before Kobe World. I see where you're coming
then
from.
Then don't have all these matches to be booked at 2 weeks out.
Well, that's going to be the point I make until the end of time. I think it's entirely inexcusable to be in a situation again where you don't have a Kobe World main event before this July Corken show. I find that to be utterly absurd. I find that to be absolutely terrible booking. And so I'm with you there. Did his presence on the show bother me? No, it did not. Do I think his presence on the show was perhaps representative of some larger issues? Yes, I do.
Yeah, it just got me in a real bad mood throughout this show. Like the amount that, like, especially when I sit here and look at it across what all happened throughout the show. And it really, at least to me, it felt like that this was checklist stuff. Like, of course, if you're going to do all these angles too, Johnny coming back as a surprise was kind of fun. But the rest of the angles were exactly as expected and felt like, okay, there we go. we have the Twin Gate match. We're building up the Dream Gate, and I don't know. It just, if you're going to like have like things being hinged on this final go home show, don't have it hinged so heavily on it that everyone knows exactly what's going to get booked coming out of it. You know, like that there was no surprises other than Masakatsu Funaki coming in for Jiro.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. It's a show that was technically proficient, but entirely uninteresting. Let's spend some time on the main event, KZ versus Cielo. Yeah,
the Drinky match.
It felt, you know, it felt to me about 50-50 going in. I think in a weird way, the right guy won. I have not bought into this idea, and maybe this is just a singular issue with me, but I have not bought into this idea of Cielo as a big show headliner, let alone a Kobe World headliner. I was kind of blown away at the push that he received, and although his performances again were, you know, it's much like the Coach Minoru Yuki Yoshioka stuff right now, where his performances are fine. I think he's doing the right thing, but it's still somehow uninspired and not really grabbing my attention in the way that they would hope. And so I think had they had Cielo win this match, I think it would have been maybe the single biggest booking risk this company has ever taken going back to January 31st, 1999. I'm glad they didn't do that. I don't think the solution to this promotion's woes right now is to put in an unproven guy into the Kobe World main event where, you know, just to try to make what I think is an apples-to-apples comparison, not that Takuma Fujiwara should have headlined Kobe World 2022, but Mike, you remember the 6 months we had with Fujiwara and Dragon Gate in the last half of 2021 and the beginning of 2022, where Fujiwara was exploding in popularity because every show you would put him on, he felt like the best wrestler on the roster. He was doing the most exciting thing on the roster. Cielo has a great tope. He has a great look. I'm not doubting that he is capable of having great matches. But Mike, let's be honest. It's not like Cielo's routed him off this year. It's not like Cielo is somebody that I'm considering for SFM 50. You know, I don't think if you had to put together a list, I mean, he might be in that 40 to 50 range for you, but he wouldn't be for me right now. And it's not like I love a lot of wrestling this year. You know, it's slim pickings, and I still don't think Cielo's on that list. So I'm glad that they didn't essentially try to dunk from the free throw line with Cielo, because I don't think they would have gotten the ball in the basket come Kobe World.
Yeah, it became clear to me throughout this match that this was an important match for Cielo to have on his career, but this was not the stepping point for him to then main event Kobe World. Mm-hmm. Like that was something that kind of became really kind of clear watching the shows from Osaka and Kobe with the knowledge of what would happen. Just like, I'm not someone that stays unspoiled. Like that's just reality of it. And it just kind of became not the holes in this guy's game and that aspect of it. It just like he feels like a very inexperienced big time match. And like that, the fan response was, at least if we're not able to really tell that, oh crap, Cielo's over, that it has to be, in no offense to Jay or people who talk to us about this, like if we have to be told that he's over versus being able to see that he's over, then he's not ready for like that kind of push, right? Like mm-hmm. to me, that was a pretty big kind of thing that I felt like there was like a big level of disconnect there with it. So I thought that this, in a lot of ways, this match was the big KZ match without any of the kind of emotion kind of involved, because it was, in a lot of ways, it was KZ getting to a certain point and unloading the clip and hitting the impact and winning. Like that was kind of the match, and him showing that he has the elbows and like he's going to, you know, punch you to death. It's like, it's the old Chris Hero saying that he's KZ and he does elbows, and that's great. That's part of the reason why you love KZ with it. It just like, as soon as we got into the ring with these two guys, it became abundantly clear whose position it needed to be and who needed to win there. And they got there. Like, I don't think Cielo did anything wrong. I just think that this is a match that we should be now looking at with like, okay, he can do a big singles match and not like lose himself there. And next time we could already go like, maybe next time he gets the dream key and goes for it. But I, with everything of Cielo over the last year, it was the guy that I guess had to lose to KZ, because I think that they didn't really want to deviate away from the Shimizu plan that they were originally going to do. And this was going to originally be Shimizu versus KZ.
I don't know. I mean, you're right about the Cielo part of this. He didn't do anything wrong, but this is a Corkin main event singles match that never ever approached being a great match. It wasn't a bad match, but I never felt like I was watching something great. And that is so highly concerning for anybody in this position.
Well, I have a big question for you in this match.
Please.
Did you buy it at all for Cielo's Tombstone?
Maybe not the Tombstone. I think I maybe bought more into the idea of Cielo winning from just a broad overview perspective than any...
But in the match itself, was there ever a moment that you were like, oh, I think Cielo is going to win this?
Not a pinfall, no. Again, I watched this live, so I watched this unspoiled, and
sure.
I was buying into the idea of Cielo possibly winning from an overview, from a broad standpoint, but never one specific near fall or one specific move.
And I think that if we are going to say if there's a failure or not, like if you ever get a guy into like these kind of positions where it's like he's not like an underdog, but like less than a year in, like these kinds of things, if I don't have a hope near fall, that really colors this, right? And I never had a single moment where I bought into Cielo winning or was going like, oh dang, he really got him there. And maybe that is the fact that I watched it much later, but the fact that you didn't have that in the moment either, I think that really kind of tells a story here.
No, but again, I think that speaks to, you know, both of our points, where I don't think there were really any exciting near falls in this match. It never struck me as a match that could have possibly been great. It was a very good match from start to finish, perfectly average, inoffensive, but I don't feel motivated by KZ in the same way that I don't think had Cielo won, you know, let's just say he rolled KZ up right after, you know, what would have been KZ's finish. I don't think I would have been enthused by Cielo either. And that leads us to the issue where, since the public anointing of Ryo Saito and as general manager after Kobe World 2021, and, you know, Mike, I don't think it's revisionist history to say that you and I were extremely, extremely engaged in the Kobe World 2021 Dreamgate booking. You know, obviously Yoshino's retirement headlined the second of those shows, but first night, KZ versus Skywalker, with Skywalker then as Dreamgate champion. Second night, the winner of that goes on to wrestle Yamato. And we were so enthralled by, is it going to be Skywalker versus Yamato? Is it going to be KZ versus Yamato? Is KZ going to beat Skywalker and then lose to Yamato? Is KZ going to beat Skywalker and then beat Yamato? Is Skywalker going to be able to both guys? Is it going to be Skywalker beating KZ and then Yamato beating Skywalker, which is what ended up happening? Really, really interesting booking from that perspective. A great King of Gate that year with KZ winning and just looking dominant, and that whole thing was great. And it led us to a really entertaining 2 days where, you know, the point I've always made about Skywalker is those matches were both so great that it hurts his legacy because they've sort of cannibalized each other and nobody has the definitive Shun Skywalker match because it's 50-50 on whether they like KZ from July 31st, 2021 or Yamato from August 1st, 2021 more. Since then, Kobe World 2022 was the Coach Minoru debacle. It was Yoshioka versus Kai and Yoshioka versus Minoru on those two shows. The next year, five-way cage match headlines. I think we were all pretty into the cage match idea, but underneath that was Yoshioka versus Kakuta 1, which was an abomination of a Dreamgate match. Bad match, terrible booking. I thought at the time that it was just Yoshioka and Kakuta not being able to overcome bad booking, which led to them having a stale match. Turns out those guys, just for whatever reason, don't mesh together. 2024, Benkei versus Yamato, inoffensive but rushed, you know, Monte is the champion going into 2024. He defends against Skywalker in January in a match that I thought should have been the Kobe World main event that year. Instead, they do it in January, not July. He defends against Susumu and then Valletta and then loses the belt to Ben K so that we could do Ben versus Yamato at World. Not bad, and, you know, certainly a great match, but not one that was heated, not this long-running story. Another rush job that I think worked out in Dragon Gate's favor, but certainly there's an alternate universe where that crashes and burns as well. You get Shun versus Yamato last year, which was great up until the added stipulation that if Skywalker lost, he would leave Dragon Gate. And I think if we all had to do that again, we would just have Yamato retain and have Shun say his goodbyes then. And now this year we have KZ versus Kakuta, which feels ice cold. There's no story between those two here. Those two wrestled in a few multi-man matches in January when they were telling the story of Shimizu versus Natural Vibes. They did not touch again until June after the KZ versus Cielo match was booked, which means there's no long-term story. There's no threads to grab onto. There's nothing they're doing here. This is another rushed storyline, another rushed Kobe World main event that I am just completely unenthused by. And we'll do a more full breakdown next week, Mike. But the sick thing is, you tell me if you disagree, I think I'd rather Kakuta win than KZ.
I just think you gotta get the belt off Kakuta. Like, I don't like the idea that it's KZ. I think that it looks like, well, we've tried everything else. Let's go with the guy that never has been there before, but he's the veteran that everyone loves. And maybe, in a way, it feels like a completely unearned Hirooki Goto push. And I still go back to just the thing that Kakuta has just been such a negative as a champion. And it just, like, at this point, I don't know what your exit strategy is. If it's not having a go home, everyone's kind of happy after last year when Shun won and got turned on immediately. Like, I don't know what you do with Kakuta as champion if he gets past this.
I get it, and I don't even think you're wrong. I think the problem is that if KZ wins, I would imagine we set up pretty immediately a Strong Machine J heel turn. And then we're just doing more.
Which is the exact same thing that happened at Kobe World last year.
That's the thing. I'm not seeing a scenario in which KZ wins the belt. What should happen is KZ should win the belt. And then it just give me down the middle Dreamgate matches for 6 months. Give me KZ versus Yamato. Give me KZ versus Hyo and Korakuen. Give me KZ versus Monte. You want to give me KZ versus Ishin, that's fine. But I want babyface versus babyface Dreamgate matches. And I know we're not going to get that. I know if KZ wins, they're turning Strong Machine J, which theoretically makes sense. But after everything we've seen with Kakuta, I just don't care. I would rather Kakuta hold the belt for a year, hold the belt a little bit longer. What's one or two more bad defenses? Who gives a shit at this point? It just makes sure that whoever then defeats Kakuta for the belt, which I guess I would hope would be Tanaka, that they at least have a greater runway and they have something more interesting than what I think of KZ versus Strong Machine J.
Yeah, like that's the other side of it is I just absolutely have no interest in Strong Machine J, and as like a, not even as a heel, just like as a character, I feel like he's completely just go home with me. So like turning him heel,
I could get reinvested into Strong Machine J. I don't think it's going to be by way of wearing a yellow and black mask and turning heel and joining Gaja Dokuro. I just don't think that's the way that they're going to get me. I'm very open to the possibility. I want it. I want to care about Strong Machine J. A heel turn joining Gaja Dokuro, not the way it's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I don't think that it's the case there. And like, how quickly do you think that they would get the belt onto Tanaka if it's not this? Because I don't know. It still really feels like that he's clearly going to win at World. I mean, Homari got a win on TV for once, but it's
against Kimura. Yeah, that was nice to say.
Yeah, yeah. But so he's going to probably be Bravegate coming out of this. And is it something where he drops it at Tokyo Infinite Hectopascal, and then you're looking at, okay, whatever the replacement for... actually, that would work, because I was about to say the replacement for Gate of Destiny. So yeah, no, that would work for him winning in Osaka somehow. Yeah, no, I think
the replacement for Gate of Destiny? What's that show called?
I have to look that back up again, but
it's not on the Drengate website. Oh yeah, yes, it is. Hold on. No, it's not. They've just got the September 12th Tokyo show. They don't have an Osaka show that I see. Let me check Jay's Blue Sky real quick. Maybe it's there, but I wanna get that before I make my next point.
They don't have anything. Yeah, they only have Korakuen's and Homecoming shows announced in October and November.
Let's just assume there's a big Osaka show in October or November. My guess is, given that September 12th is the big Tokyo show, that they wait until November to do a big Osaka show. Let's just say there's a big Osaka show in November. What fucking difference does it make for Kakuta to hold the belt through November? He can defend it against KZ at World. He can do Minora, let's say, in August. He can do, you know, fucking Yamato in September. He can do Strong Machine J in September. You know, I don't really want to do Mochizuki in September, but let's just say maybe Mochizuki. And then you build up Tanaka for the November Osaka show. I mean, that I could get behind. But this is the problem with this promotion right now, is there's all of this heat, there's all of this heel work, and there's no guaranteed saviors. And the way they've positioned Minora and Yoshioka, it seems very obvious to me that they're not going to be the guys to dethrone Kakuta. So yes, you might get some reprieve with them beating Ishin and Kato, and that's fine. I understand that is symbolic in some way or another, but we're now 11 months into a Madoka Kakuta reign where there has been no obvious contender to dethrone him outside of Yoshioka, who was beaten, and outside of Tanaka, who we might never get that match. That might not be the direction they're going, even if Tanaka feels like the hottest guy on the roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're right about that. I did scroll a little bit. They don't have anything announced for after Tokyo Infinite Hectopascal, other than the new name for Gate of Origin, which is a Hoku Dragon Gateway, which, at least according to Jay's Blue Sky, might be the last quote-unquote big show of the year.
Interesting.
And that's on September 28th. That's on September 20th. So, yeah, it looks like unless we do a doubleheader somewhere, it looks like we're going to be looking at that.
I would love a Dreamgate match in Osaka Sky Hall. I would be very entertained by that. They'll never do that, but I would like to see that. I mean, to me, I'm far more intrigued by the idea of Tanaka dethroning Kakuta than KZ dethroning Kakuta. And I will flesh out more thoughts next week, but I don't feel like this KZ challenge is earned. I mean, when you look at what he's done this year, he got killed by Shimizu all of January. He wins the Triangle Gate belts in February, but the star of that team is Gucci. That's not like that was a defining reign for KZ. He was the third most interesting guy in that team. They defend the belts against outsiders in April at Golden Coliseum. They lose the belts to outsiders in Okinawa. His Korakuen's this year, he lost to Shimizu in January. The New Vibes debuted in February. They wrestle jobbers in March. They do Vibes versus Paradox in April and May. He's in that three-way tag with Cielo at the first June Korakuen show. He's in the all-natural Vibes tag on the second June Korakuen show. And then he's got the Cielo match here. That's not a guy who's been in a focused position for the entire year. He was a complete afterthought March, April, May of this year. And quite honestly, when he set his sights for the Kobe World main event in June, it came across uncharacteristic. It came across out of place. It came across like a guy who was calling a shot when he had no business to call his shot. And yet he was somehow the better of the two options of the guys that were wrestling for the main event in Kobe World. As I said previously, just to reiterate one more time, there's no thread to latch onto between he and Kakuta. There's no story there. If your theory is correct that they just want to put their head down, and the idea of this promotion this year was going to be Shimizu versus Casey at Kobe World, cool. Shimizu got hurt in February. Plenty of time to pivot. Yeah. Plenty of time to put the belt on Yoshioka. Plenty of time to put the belt on Tanaka. Plenty of time to put the belt on anybody else. And plenty of time, most importantly, to build up a Kobe World main event that wasn't Kakuta versus Casey, which I think on paper might be the weakest Kobe World main event we've ever seen.
No, I'm with you on that, and we'll talk a lot more about this match and the rest of Kobe World card next week on our preview show. Where else do you want to get on to the Kobe? We had the Minoli finally coming together with Jason Lee versus Kota Minoura, and Kota Minoura being able to slay that dragon with the help of his new friend Yuki Yoshioka. It's nice to see former classmates in Mochizuki Dojo get along. You know, it's nice to see. They are now united, and they will be facing off against Team 204 at Kobe World for the Twin Gate title.
Functionally, I thought Minoura versus Jason Lee was a very solid match. It's one of those where I think they're doing everything correctly. It's not necessarily helping me care about Minoura or Yuki Yoshioka more. I think those guys need new gear. I think they need to go to tights. They need to go to tights and just, we need to grab an eraser and erase some things that are on the dry erase board of Coach Minoura and Yuki Yoshioka, because with the look that they have, I only see their past failures, and it's not fair to them. But if they're going to be a team, and we're going to buy into them as, you know, say this generation's the next coming of D-Courage, they got to get a new look. And that is important for both of those guys. And maybe if they get a new look, I'll be more invested in them as a duo.
Yeah, I hate the fact that Minoura still is wearing Gacha Dokoro gear. Like, that pisses me off more than Yoshioka. Yoshioka is still wearing his T-shirt from his return last year. Did you notice like that is the only Yuki Yoshioka t-shirt it seems like they have made over the last 18 months?
Yeah, it's just it's more laziness from the promotion. I'm not surprised by it.
But you were absolutely right. This was a perfectly fine and functional match. I was a gentleman's three on this because it was the most gentleman's three ass Gacha Dokoro interference match one could have. There are three different instances of that on that match, which was, given what the rest of the card was with Gacha Dokoro, I guess you had to load it up here, but it just, you know, whenever it really kind of get going between these two in the way that we know that these two could, you had Gacha Dokoro bullshit throughout the match, and that just makes it have a hard cap on top of it.
Absolutely. I think as successful as it could have been for a match of this type, it's a match that I'm a little burnt out on seeing. Thought Jason played his role super well. I think Minoura's functionally fine. I thought the Yoshioka run-in came across great, and the crowd seemed to get into that. So more power to
the
him.
Crowd's into these two. That's the thing. One thing.
More power to them. I think that Twin Gate match at World is going to be a pretty hot match. My fear, as Jay illustrated on Blue Sky, my fear is that it's going to go to a no contest, and we'll do an August tag league for the vacant Twin Gate belts, which if that's the case, fucking shoot me. I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
I thought we finally did away with Summer Adventure Tag Leagues. That's something that does not need to come back. I have enough.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, like, I had enough trauma from how much it completely shot people in the knees as new champions that they had to go do a tag league immediately right after. I don't have any faith for it not to completely, if it's going the way I expect, completely cut off KZ's title, just in general, because it's going to be a tag league time throughout up until Tokyo Infinite Hectopascal, I guess.
So I actually totally disagree with that. I think this promotion desperately needs a tag league right now, or needs some sort of tournament. And if KZ's, let's say KZ's Dreamgate champion, he's, I mean, is he teaming with Aki? Is he teaming with Gucci? No, he's probably teaming with Strong Machine Jay. And they're probably going to rerun the angle that they did with Jason and Jackie in the semifinals of Rey de Parejas this year, where Strong Machine Jay turns on KZ. And then, fine, you have something coming out of it. I desperately need a tag league right now just to give a reset. Let's assume they don't fuck up the Bravegate thing and have Tanaka lose. So Tanaka and Kimura can team together. You can set up another Tanaka Bravegate challenger that way. You can get some Jackie Rita stuff. You can put Young Vibes and a bunch of matches together to see what they do. It actually works as a soft reset for this promotion right now. They could stumble into that tag league being super beneficial. And I think there is a massive difference, which is unfortunate, but I think there's a massive difference between a Yamato 2016 Dreamgate reign getting the knees cut off and a KZ 2026 Dreamgate reign where, you know, who cares?
Yeah, no.
The other thing with that last Summer Adventure tag league is that you got to remember, it was bad that they cut off Yamato's knees with the tag league. It was made worse by the fact that Tozawa was leaving. And that's really what caused the problems with that Yamato reign, was they went tag league into Yamato versus Tozawa, which we all thought might be Tozawa's last match. We knew he wasn't going to win. And then Yamato won. And then they announced the Tozawa farewell tour. So we went from August to the beginning of November with it just being about Tozawa leaving or the tag league.
Yep, that's fair to say about that. Going
so,
down,
I'm yeah. into Minoru Yoshioka. I hope they get new gear, but I'm fine with them for right now.
So the ARP card holders versus Gacha Dokuro went to a interesting kind of finish, only because Johnny Valletta returned after in 2 minutes of the match. I hate the fact that Gacha Dokuro did the laziest ass version of combat mode ever by wearing the t-shirt and track pants. Like, come on, guys. That felt like at least give half a shit there. But Johnny Valletta returns. He does a claw slam. And then Masaki Mochizuki does a series of buzzsaw kicks to get the win. And then right after that, where it's Johnny Valletta grabs a microphone asking what's up with Saipatra. An unannounced Shun Skywalker shows up, tries to tell him that Saipatra is no more, but wants to have a match of Johnny. They have a match together. It's 2 minutes. Johnny Valletta kind of runs through Skywalker, the King Kong knee drop, and at Kobe World and Shun Skywalker's final Kobe World appearance, there'll be a Saipatra reunion of all things.
I will table my thoughts for Skywalker's farewell for next week. That'll give us something to chew on then.
Yep, I'll save my. I know who they should have, what they should have done for Skywalker's final match.
I have multiple suggestions for things they could have done other than what they're doing. My question for you, just as it pertains to the Korakuen show, what is the end game of this old man versus Gacha Dokuro stuff? What's the payoff here?
There is none.
Is this the payoff?
This was the payoff, I feel like. Johnny Valletta returning.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, because like they're not going to, the old guys aren't a unit. We already did away with an old person's unit 5 years ago with that loss, and they weren't supposed to reunite. So you get Mochizuki in here, and then you're able to kind of run the same thing here. Like you can't, they're not going to retire. Like there's no sense of finality that can be offered here with this.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's depressing to think about. I mean, I feel like I've historically been Valletta's biggest fan. I wrote the giant article on the guy in December about how great he's been. The King of Gate and the Kakuta match, I mean, that was his write-off. I'm uninterested in Valletta going forward. I don't need to see anything. He nailed it. He was perfect through the Kakuta match. That was the last time we ever needed to see him. And I don't think him teaming with either Genki or even if you want to throw him into Paradox, like that doesn't do anything for me.
No, I hear you with that. We had what I thought was the best match of the show before this. Yuki Yoshioka teaming with Himare versus Ryoya Tanaka and Kazuma Kimura. The finish was Himare getting a win on TV with a Melahoma, which is his spinning flapjack move. Really fun one. Afterwards, they further build up the Brave Gate match, and Tanaka Gun announces their first member as Ryoya Tanaka asks for Kazuma Kimura to join him in his new unit.
In theory, I like this a lot. I like that Kimura is getting in a unit. I like that Tanaka is getting a unit. I would have liked to have seen this a little bit more fleshed out, just what the vision was for the unit, so that going into Kobe World, Tanaka would be able to have a big debut with a logo and some new gear and to really make an impression. This is just one of those Dragon Gate 2026 issues where I think they half-assed what could have been a major angle. And I think it would have been really great for Tanaka to say, I've been thinking for the last month, ever since I don't have D-Courage, I need colors, I need branding, I need a name. This is what it's going to be. And Kazuma Kimura, you're the first guy I want in my unit. And they just did half of that. They took shortcuts. And now at Kobe World, Tanaka's going to wear old gear and probably have a fancy coat when he makes his entrance. But it's not going to be what it could have been. It's not going to have the impact that it could have been. And I think that's super disappointing.
Yeah, and you have the fact that, okay, Kimura is going to be on the main show. I thought that he was in the advance match with everyone else there. But yeah, it could have been a moment for both of them to kind of come out in new gear with that and maybe reveal the name at Kobe World. That could have been a fun thing to do. But the match itself, I thought that the chemistry is there between Tanaka and Himari, and that's fun. The Himari issue still kind of stands there. But Yoshioka and Kimura, I felt like, was like the best part of this match. I really like Yoshioka and Kimura. I think they have really good chemistry for each other. And I mean, whenever these units for Yoshioka and Mino and whoever else they eventually add to that and Tanaka Gun kind of flesh out, I look forward to future Kazuma Kimura versus Yoshioka matchups.
No, it's another good Kazuma Kimura performance. I mean, what else is new at this point? He's weirdly become one of the most consistent guys on the entire roster. Stoked that he's in a unit. I love the idea of he and Tanaka together. It's another one of those weird reasons to advocate for an August tag league, is even if Kimura loses a ton, I still think Tanaka and Kimura spending a month teaming with each other will do more good than it will harm. So I'm all for that. I really like this. I just think they missed a massive opportunity to unveil a new unit and have something to care about going into World. I think that's an odd choice by them. We'll talk more about the Brave Gate booking and my fears with it next week.
We'll do. Going through the undercard, the last undercard match with really a lot of meat on the bone was Natural Vibes versus Love and Peace, Strong Machine J, UT, Gucci, and Aki versus Hyo Mochizuki Jr. and Jackie Rita. Interesting finish. It was Mochizuki Jr., who never gets pushed, getting a win over Aki, who seemingly has not been on TV a whole lot here, but worked as a complete sprint throughout it. It was sub 10 minutes, but a lot of meat on the bone here. And yet again, another Natural Vibes match that I felt like the real star of it was Gucci.
Natural Vibes, absolutely. Their star was Gucci. I thought this was a stellar Rita performance as well. They went with the finish of the two guys that aren't in the Triangle Gate match at World, which I wouldn't have done. I think that's probably the least interesting of the options. It doesn't really give us a lot to look forward to as we head into World, but I get it. And I'm really not in a position to complain about Mochizuki Jr. getting a win in a Cork and Hall show. So I don't necessarily like it, but I get it. And I thought this was the best match of the night. I had this at 3.5.
Yeah, I had both this and the tag at 3.5 for me personally. Mm-hmm. But I liked seeing Kimura and Yoshioka just a touch more. Let's buzz through the three most undercard matches. The next match in Jiro Shimbashi's train tour was against Alexander Otsuka. It was about what you expect for Alexander Otsuka and Jiro Shimbashi here. Post-match, we announcing Jiro versus Masakatsu Funaki at World. That should be fun. Funaki weirdly gets Dragon Gate comedy matches a lot better than other guys in that kind of position, as seen in the World match he had against Ichikawa.
Yeah, I thought it'll be fine. I thought the Otsuka match was whatever. I'm a little burnt out on these Jiro matches now.
Yeah, I want to see him on the main roster. I liked when we had that match where he was teaming with Kimura. Like, I wanted to see more of him getting further ingratiated in the roster in the way that Kimura is at this point. But I know comedy character in X, Y, and Z, that gets a little bit difficult. Atomiko, Owashi, Punch Tominaga, Mandai Ryu, and Ryo Fuda versus Yamato, BB Hull, Kagetora, and Doi. It was a Guramaka Kari to get the win there. Not much there. Too much punch for me. And they opened with Monte and Flamita teaming up against Susumu and Dragon Kid in a fun enough opener. Flamita gets the win with a fun fly out of the Jumbo Nokachi.
It was fine. It was there's a main event version of this match. They did not have that. They had the pedestrian opening version of this match instead.
Yep. And that was what I thought. I thought last month's first Korakuen was really kind of dire. This month's Korakuen, it's not that it was dire, at least the one I reviewed last month compared to this, just felt like watching paint dry in a way that Dragon Gate should not be at any sense of the word, really.
I would agree with that. I think that's a good way of putting it.
All right, buddy. I think that's going to do it for this time on Open the Voice Gate. Do you have anything else you want to touch on before we're out of here?
I do not.
All right. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate, both on Twitter and on Blue Sky. You can follow Case at _ in your case. You can follow me at Fujiheya with two eyes like Don Fuji. There's the Voices of Wrestling Discord also, where we have the Dragon Gate channel as well as the Open the Voice Gate channel. That's where we post our show notes and stuff for those days, as well as any programming notes. Those go up there first. But next time we'll be back previewing the biggest show in Dragon Gate's year. That's right. Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival 2026 is upon us, and we'll be back next week to talk all about it for the preview. We'll talk to you at that time. Take care, everyone.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.